You're listening to Middle Class Rockstar.
I'm your host, Andy Sido. I'm a singer-songwriter, performer, composer, music teacher, and avid Buffs basketball fan living in Denver, Colorado. My guest today is Andy Frasco. The first time we met was a few years ago at Globe Hall in Denver. I was the opening act for his band, The UN, and his keyboard broke during their set. He didn't seem to dwell on it too much. Instead, he asked me to toss up my keyboard and jump in with the band. Within a couple of minutes, I had a beer dumped on my head, and Andy was off in the far corner of the venue somewhere riling up the audience. I felt a little awkward for the first few minutes, but then I felt like I'd been in the band for years. I had an incredible time and didn't want the night to end. I think this is how Frasco shows go for most people. If his career ended right now, he's somebody who could say he's accomplished more than what 99% of all other artists who have tried to make it have. He's played major festivals, sold out mid-sized clubs and theaters all over the country, and bumped shoulders with many other great artists along the way. What started out as playing 250 shows a year and sleeping on couches and vans has turned into a well-oiled machine. Andy has also navigated quarantine better than any other artist I've seen. For the last 3+ months, he's hosted weekly dance parties and put out countless funny videos and documentaries that often have nothing at all to do with music. He also has his own podcast, Andy Frasco's World Saving Podcast, which has played host to the likes of Marcus King, Shaky Graves, and Theo Katzman. If you would like to listen to the entire episode of Middle Class Rockstar, you can do so on all streaming platforms or YouTube. Here's a segment from my conversation with Andy Frasco.
I love the music industry, man. I grew up listening to like pop punk music and like Something Corporate, Newfound Glory.
Of course.
And I worked for Drive Thru Records and thought I was just going to be like a record exec and be a band promoter and or a booking agent just on the other side. And it was 2006 and I didn't realize that Shazam and whatever, not Shazam, what is it? Like Napster and what was the other one? LimeWire.
LimeWire.
And I'm like, I'm just going to take the skills I learned in high school and start playing music and just market myself, you know, just kind of do the blue collar musician style and just get on the road. And I booked myself for like 7 years straight, doing 250 shows a year, just like in my van. And basically Craigslisting musicians to back me up like Chuck Berry. And from there on, I started building a fan base. And now I've been doing it now for about 14 years. So it's coming together.
That's rad. And it's interesting to me that you come from the opposite angle. I feel like most people in the music industry wanted to be a rock star and it didn't work out. So they got in the industry. You wanted to be in the industry. And then you did the opposite thing.
Yeah, I'm Jewish. I like money and stuff. So it's like, I was like, I love music. But I did, you know, at first it was like, how am I going to make money doing this? You know, it's like, you hear all these horror stories of all these musicians not reading their contracts or not, you know, just getting, yeah. And I didn't want that. So I wanted to learn everything I can about the music industry before, because the whole end goal was to be a musician. When I was a kid, I was just, you know, doing Battle of the Bands, like lip singing in front of a mirror, just like working on my moves and shit, you know.
Right.
I've always wanted to be a lead singer for like a band like Real Big Fish or like Newfound Glory. It was like super energy, the crowds, you know, going left and right, swaying. And, you know, I didn't really get to, wasn't able to do that for musically. And I just morphed into what is my sound now is just, you know, energetic, soul music, I guess.
Now, does the audience that started coming to your shows influence the type of music that you're making now?
100%. I mean, the jam scene got involved with me, 7 years ago. I got on all the festivals and kind of ran with it. And I was just focused on like live performance, because that scene is all about live performance. You know, records don't really mean that much as the last concert they went to, you know, right. Like that means more to them. So so that like kind of steered me, because I never would listen to jam music. I was listening to like folk and like Death Cab for Cutie and like Postal Service and like Damien Rice. And I never even knew that Phish existed, really. And so I kind of like started going this way, listening to Allman Brothers, Van Morrison, The Band, and then like Muddy Waters, B.B. King, like, and it kind of just, I kind of veered left. And, you know, I'm thankful I did that, because I've, you know, being in a pop punk band is hard.
Yeah.
Because you know? You only get like your, a lot of those tours, there's five bands on a tour. You have like 30 minutes to prove your point. You know, my scene now is like, I can play for 2 or 3 hours and like, yeah, give me some more. So it's like,
it's a nice scene to be in.
It's nice. Yeah. It's, you know, it's a lot of pressure because you have to have a new set every time you come into town.
Right.
And if you're gigging 4 times a year, that's like you're playing that town 3 or 4 times. They expect something new every set.
Well, so let's talk about how the touring started, because you're somebody who's a total road dog. And I watched a little bit of those two documentaries that were posted. God, one of them was 10 years ago. It's funny to see you with the guys then, and some of them you're still playing with.
Yeah.
Which is really cool. But you're going out and touring 250 dates a year, I presume at first to nobody, correct?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Like, you know, I kind of, or like people, maybe it was a packed room. Like my game plan in the beginning was I'm going to hit every bar in these state schools and colleges and college towns that were doing like $2, like you call it, you know, like, you know, just to have a packed room. Then it's my job to figure out how to entertain a bunch of bros just trying to get laid. You know, it's like, so I was working on just like my entertaining skills, but like, yeah, like, but like there was duds for sure. I mean, for maybe the first 5 years, if I was doing 250 shows a year, the first 5 years, at least 175 of them a year were nobody there.
Yeah.
And like, so basically you're living off of, you know, the game plan was to, all right, let the venue feed us. If we make a $200, we'll have gas money to get to the next town. We'll find someone's couch to sleep on, because, you know, it's like when you just let go for to the universe, you know, you will, the universe is going to take care of you. You just have to like kind of just like go with the flow and not either be pissed off that it's not going your way or be pissed off that no one's at the show.
You've been listening to a short snippet of Middle Class Rockstar. You can hear our entire conversation on any streaming platform or YouTube. Thanks for listening.